Summer's hotter weather is finally here, but don't let hair loss also make you sweat. Regrow hair with help from Hims. They provide access to personalized treatment so you can see thicker, fuller hair in just 3 to 6 months. Get started from the comfort of home. Fill out an intake form and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Grant Wall. Welcome to the Planet Football Podcast. This week's guest is Adriana Monsalve of Univision Deportes. I've been a big admirer of her work for a long time, but I had never actually met her until doing this podcast interview. For reasons that will become clear in the podcast, she encourages everyone to register to be an organ donor at organdonor.gov. Just a quick reminder, it's a huge help if you subscribe to, rate, and review the podcast. It helps people find us. Onward! Our guest today is Adriana Monsalve of Univision Deportes. She's one of the biggest stars of American soccer television, and she did something absolutely amazing earlier this year, donating one of her kidneys to her brother, Adrián. Adriana, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Grant. Such a pleasure to be here with you. Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. Yeah, I'm a superhero. What can I tell you?
It really is an incredible story. And I wanted to start with that, if it's okay. You just came back to work in late February after donating your kidney to your brother. How are you doing and how is he doing?
Well, I'm doing fine. It's unbelievable how the science, you know, works for transplant, for kidney transplant. And they just make everything easier and really normal for the donor. As soon as you get all the tests and you are, that you are... Oh, how do you say that word? Just ran out of my mind.
En español?
Approved.
Yeah.
When you are approved as a donor, they just try to let the world know how easy it could be for a donor. And for me, it's been awesome. I'm really, really healthy. My brother is doing great with, we call my kidney, baby kidney for him because he's like 6'2 and I'm 5'4. So my kidney was really, really small for him, but it's been working as a champ and all the levels that he needs to, you know, to adjust to this new organ, are in the right direction. So he's already starting, his work from home, mm-hmm. but he's starting to have his, you know, his normal life, and he's great. He feels awesome. So I'm just, you know, happy, really happy.
Yeah, that's really great to hear. Could you possibly tell me the story of what happened that led to you donating your kidney?
Yeah, of course. My dad passed away in 2004. Mm-hmm. And he suffered his disease that is called PKD, which means polycystic kidney disease. Mm-hmm. When he was starting doing the dialysis 25 years ago, we got tested to see if we both had PKD, because it's an inherited disease that you get from your mom or your dad. Mm-hmm. So we got tested. We both got tested, Adrián and I, and he got the disease when he was 20, 20 years old. So at that moment, I realized that, you know, that probably my brother was going to need my help somehow. So I decided at that moment that probably I was, you know, I was meant to be, you know, his sister and to be special for him. And well, he started to live his life totally normal. He went to London to study. Then he got married. Then he moved to the U.S. To work here. And, you know, he had kids, everything like, you know, normal people do. And, well, this disease is a progressive thing. And the function of your kidneys start, you know, the whole process, they stop functioning. And you have either have dialysis or either have a transplant. And here in the U.S., it's you know, kidney diseases are really common. Like the numbers are, they're really, it's afraid all the numbers that people that need a transplant in this country, and not just in this country, in the world, because kidney diseases are one of the diseases that really affect population. So when I got back from the World Cup, that I was there for 45 days working, he talked to me and he told me, well, it's time. My kidneys are no longer working. Well, he had like 5% of function until the day of the surgery. So at least he didn't have to go to a dialysis. So he told me that he needed to start the whole process to find a kidney. The time to find a kidney here in the U.S. is 3 to 5 years. And he also mentioned, of course, I know because my dad was transplanted 25 years ago back in Venezuela, in our country, that was one of the options for him. So he told me, well, we have a lot of options here in the U.S. We have a transplant for a deceased person. We have also the option of someone who can give me the kidney if it's really matched with me, and the other is dialysis. So, well, at that moment, like 25 years of my life went through really quick again, and I just remember the opportunity that I have to live with my dad when he got transplanted. He lasted 10 years after that, but there were 10 years of quality of life with us. He saw us, you know, graduating from college. He saw us starting a new family with our, you know, partners, and he couldn't see our, you know, his grandkids, but he spent a lot of time with us because that person, when passed away, wanted to donate a kidney. So I said to myself, well, I'm not going to think this too much. I already took this decision 25 years ago when I find out that he was having the PKD. So I said to him, well, I just want to be tested. And I want to see if I'm, you know, able to give you my kidney. So we started the whole process just right after the World Cup finished. And I got tested. First, it was the match test. And we were really matchable. So my kidney was, for him, was the best option that he had. My sister-in-law also wants to be tested, but as soon as we realized that I was a really good match for him, so we just, you know, took the decision that I was going to be the person who gave the kidney away. And then, of course, I got through a lot of tests that physically, for me, they just want to realize if you are able to live with one kidney. And, you know, after that, everything was like a roller coaster of emotions. But it was great. I feel always happy to be able to help him. I never, you know, feel fear. I, as soon as I took the decision, I was totally on board with it. And I know that in so many ways, not just God, my dad always was, you know, looking from whatever place he is now, and he was going to take care of her, of his girl and boy. So everything has been great, and and we're really happy for it.
Nice. Well, your name obviously is Adriana. Your brother's name is Adrian. You're close in many ways, but you're also have always been very close to your brother personally, right?
Yeah. Totally. We've been, you know, the two of us since I was born. He always helped me when I was a kid and everything. My brother is the smart one of the family. He went to London really, really, really early at his age. He was 17 when he left house. Mm-hmm. In our culture, it's not that common. Probably here in the U.S. it's really common when you get out from high school, go to college, and you just, you know, you're not living with your parents and your family. But back in Venezuela, no, you stay with your dad and your mom until you get married. Okay. So for us, it was really hard to understand that he wanted to go overseas to study, because at that back in Venezuela, you know, the college, they were really good. Mm-hmm. But he got a scholarship, and he went to London. He studied in Imperial College, chemical engineering.
Okay.
That's why I also said that is the smart of the family. You know, I'm more journalist in the part where. And now he invited me to England to live with him for a year to study English. So my brother and I, we've always been, you know, together. And I don't know. I know all the inside of this disease because I lived it when I was, you know, with my dad. So I knew what he was going to be, you know, go through. And I just wanted to make him life easy and have the opportunity to see their kids grow and enjoy the life that he has.
So what can people do if they want to become kidney donors or organ donors in general?
Well, you know what I like the most this whole experience is that I made it publicly on social media, and every time a person text me or tell me, hey, now I'm a donor because of your story, I just wanted to create awareness of what we can do as human beings. Mm-hmm. and how easy it could be. Of course, it's going to be a risk. It's a surgery, a major surgery that you're going to go through. But the whole process, they make you just, you know, really easy. And it's all about love. And what you can do, as easy as you go to the DMV and change your license to be a donor. Mm-hmm. And I know there's a lot of myth and a lot of stories that people heard. But it's not that easy if you become a donor to really get your organs when you pass away and in a situation, for example. You need to have brain death, and your body needs to be in a certain way that it's not just, oh, okay, I'm a donor and they're not gonna help me to fix me if I have an accident because I'm a donor. So they only want my organs. No, it's more than that, and it is really complicated. Just the idea to being a donor. What else you can do as a live person? You can do it live. You can. I didn't know there's a lot of people that live with only one kidney. Mm-hmm. And what I would do? Just get tested and talk to people. I did this because, of course, it was my brother. But now that I'm a donor and a kidney donor, I think I would do it even though it's not a person related to me. Hmm. Because the whole process is really easy. And I don't know. It's just, it feels great. It feels awesome to help people in that way.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. You came to work again in late February. You recently hosted the event where the groups of the CONCACAF Gold Cup were revealed. Is the Gold Cup going to be the main thing that you do this summer for Univision? And what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, it would be. It would be our baby for this summer. Mm-hmm. I love the Gold Cup. I love the way that CONCACAF is trying to grow the area of football here. And I like to see, you know, all these events always involve so many good stories. Yeah. Not just the games and the matches per se, or also the stories around every team. Like, for example, Mexican national team is always great to see the story around the new head coach. What are they going to do if one of the players, if they're going to say no or yes to the Gold Cup, and all the drama that is involved always about the Mexico national team. How is Tata going to do it? Because Tata, it's been so successful lately, and he was really successful in the MLS. So now we want to see if he can make the difference in Mexico, if he can take the national team to a different level. The United States also is such a great story. They couldn't make it to the World Cup. Now, how are they going to do with all these young and talented players? Mm-hmm. And see if Berhalter is set to this scenario. Also, Costa Rica, which with this such a great trainer, head coach as Gustavo Matosas, which we have seen in so many great teams. Mm-hmm. With León in Mexico, he could won two championships, consecutive championships, which is not a really common thing that you see in Liga MX. So every team has something. Like Panama, they just made it to their first World Cup. See how are they going to do it with Bolillo Gomez, you know, on board? So every story is a really nice to see the opportunity to have games of the Gold Cup, not just in the U.S., in Costa Rica, in Jamaica, have the Caribbean to be more in a main role in this tournament. It's really nice to see that, and I think we're going to enjoy it, and I think you're going to enjoy it as well.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. There's also great stories in the Gold Cup of really small countries like Bermuda getting in.
And, correct.
And so that's kind of cool, I think. And there's 16 teams in the Gold Cup this year, which is more than they've had before. So you're going to have more of those types of stories.
And we have a lot of tournaments going on during the summer. So it's going to be great how the people react to them. Like we have the World Cup. Women's World Cup, we have Copa America. So I think the summer is going to be great for football people that really enjoy the sports, because you're going to have like a lot of options, and it's just up to us as journalists, as communicators, to engage with people to see our tournament.
Now I'm looking forward to this summer. I wanted to ask you, what's your career story? Because I've read that you actually started as the lead singer of some musical groups. Is that true?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I always wanted to be a singer when I was a little girl. Well, all little girls want to be a singer. But yeah, well, I was studying journalism in Venezuela, and I had the opportunity to do that as my side job. But at that moment, my side job was a little bit bigger than my career as a journalist. So I had the opportunity to make an album with a Latin pop kind of music group.
Nice.
With four girls, and we went to South America. We had like a little tour, and it was a really great experience. Helped me to build more my persona against an audience. Mm-hmm. Facing that wasn't really easy, so I think it helped me a lot to to have more experience to be on stage or just, you know, be in front of a camera. But then I moved to the U.S. in 2002. Okay. And I started my life here. I started from, you know, from zero, you know, trying to find the American dream. I started working as a front desk person in a hotel.
Oh, wow.
In Orlando. Yeah, and then, you know, as a side job, because I have to pay my bills, of course, I started doing auditions as a spokesperson with different brands here in Florida. Mm-hmm. And then I had the opportunity to be the sports anchor of a local station in Orlando in Spanish. Mm-hmm. So it was a really small station. So I had to be the producer of the sports segment, the editor of the sports segment, the talent of the sports segment, the makeup artist. So basically, I couldn't do the camera myself because, you know, the selfie stick didn't exist at that moment. But I really learned a lot of things because I was the main person of the department. Mm-hmm. And then 2 years later, I got an opportunity to go to ESPN. Mm-hmm. And they hired me as, you know, one of the main anchors of Sports Center. Mm-hmm. Back in Mexico. So I had to move to Mexico to do that. Wow. And it's, you know, I've been jumping around. Then they transferred me to LA. I went to LA to do a show. And it was a really nice show because I had the opportunity to have an opinion, not just to say the news. Mm-hmm. On the sports news. So it was great because I growth a lot in the industry. I had the opportunity to work with someone like David Faitelson, probably you know him.
Yeah.
That he's really huge in our industry. So I, you know, I learned a lot from him to debate, to have a polemic, to fight over a topic. So that was great too. And then I was Univision brought me in. 4 years ago. So now I'm living in Miami and still doing what I love, which is talk about sports and mainly soccer or football.
Yeah, nice. Well, it's interesting. Your English is obviously fantastic. Do you have any...
Oh, thank you.
Do you have any desire to ever work in English, not just Spanish?
I did some stuffs in English, but I think I miss a little bit of my... How do you say that? Like, I did some crossover things when I was in ESPN. Mm-hmm. Of course, I always gonna have accent, but who doesn't in the U.S.? Everybody has an accent in the U.S. Mine is different. Mine is Latin accent. And sometimes I found it really sexy, you know? But I don't know. You can tell me. But I don't know. Probably I miss a little bit of my... Let me find a word for that. When I'm in English, I'm not the same person when I'm in Spanish. Or I try to, but sometimes I don't find the words that I, you know, need to find in order to address whatever thing that I want to say. Mm-hmm. But of course, I always want to do English. It's a totally different scenario, different audience too. But I would love to. We can work together whenever you want. Just let me know.
Sería fantástico. But
you're really good in Spanish too.
Thank you. Next time we do this podcast, we'll do it in Spanish, maybe for the Spanish language audience.
We can do Spanglish. Everybody loves Spanglish.
But it is interesting. Hercules Gomez is a friend of mine. He obviously works in television now, and he works in both English and Spanish. And he thinks that there's actually different styles of broadcasting.
Yeah, totally.
Is that your sense too?
It is my sense too. And me as a talent, I grow up in the Hispanic culture, and I think Hispanic culture see different football, mm-hmm. for example, and they're really passionate. And I always want to transfer that passion that I have in Spanish to my English option when I have the opportunity to work in English. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I could get it, but I don't know if I miss, you know, in translation, because sometimes I don't think in English, sometimes I think Spanish and I do the translation at the same time. So sometimes it's really hard for Hercules is different. Hercules, he grew up here in the US, even right. though Spanish for him was a second language. Mm-hmm. The same is for me, but the opposite. In English, English is my second language. Sometimes I do everything and I said a lot of stuff, but sometimes I need to think or sure. overthink things. And sometimes I get, you know, really mad time to say something that I don't want to say. Well, it is complicated to do the crossover, but I think Hercules is really good doing it.
Yeah.
Also, Max Bretos, he's really good yeah. doing that Spanish-English thing. Rodolfo Landeros is really doing it really good, too.
Yeah.
And I don't know, probably when I was in ESPN, I had more opportunities to do English. Now that I'm with Univision, I'm... You know, I'm really busy.
I was gonna say you're very busy in Spanish.
So I don't know if I have, you know, the time or the opportunity to do English here. So I don't know. I love my job in Spanish, and yeah. I would never want to leave it. If I'm going to think to do some stuff in English, of course I would do it at the same time, because Spanish for me, I don't know. I found it more passionate, more sexy, more. Yeah. And as a person, as a woman working in Hispanic market in sports, mm-hmm. I just want to be, you know, open more doors for women in sports mm-hmm. in Spanish. Probably in English they already a lot, and in Spanish I just want to keep doing big things just for future generations to be more comfy in the mm-hmm. in the sports business.
Yeah. I'm curious to know, you've covered so many big events over the years. What have been some of your favorite career moments over the years?
Wow, that's a great question. I enjoy every moment of my career. And I think that makes you a better person and a better professional. The way that we do things and the way to have success is that you show people that you really care about your job and about your career. And I try to enjoy every coverage that I can have. But for me, the World Cup Russia was amazing. And I think put me in another level. Mm-hmm. I could have the opportunity in Russia to work for both networks. Univision in the U.S. and Televisa in Mexico. Mm-hmm. So it was totally exhausted because we're 45 days nonstop, yeah. but I enjoy every minute, every second of the World Cup. I have the opportunity to do this such an important tournament for our culture and for our... You know, for football, having rights be at the game, at the stadium, feeling, you know, the whole excitement of the fans, see all the process of Mexico national team, because I've been working for Mexico national teams for a while, mm-hmm. so see that they could beat Germany. In their first match, it was awesome. It was historic, and I feel like that victory for them, I got a little bit of credit too. So feel that being so engaged of your job, it was great. And Russia, as we were a lot of, I was hectic of Russia being the World Cup. Mm-hmm. Host, because we didn't know too much about how it was going to be.
Right.
And it was great. It was beautiful. I really enjoyed the culture. I really enjoyed how they show their country through the World Cup. And probably it is not the reality, but I think we enjoyed it because during that summer, they were great as hosts. And for me, was the best moment of my career.
Nice.
I even have a tattoo of it.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Nice. Just a couple more questions.
Yeah, I got one of the machuscas on my leg.
Oh, nice. Good stuff. Just a couple more questions here. Really appreciate your time on this. It's clear from your social media feeds that you care deeply about your country, Venezuela. And I know that the country has been going through a tough time. How difficult has that been for you? Do you still have family there?
Yeah, I still have family, but I don't feel bad about Venezuela just because I have family there. It's just because it's a human thing.
Yeah.
What people of Venezuela is living right now, it's really hard for me to talk about Venezuela, but my family and everybody, it's having a really hard time. When I left my country, I didn't leave my country because of the political situation. I left my country because I wanted to prove something new, to see if I was able to live out of, overseas and if I could have an international career, an international recognition, an international experience. But I always have on my thoughts that I was coming back, that I was away for a little bit to prepare myself, to bring to Venezuela all the things that I could learn in the United States and bring them to help me to build a great country. But now it's unbelievable. It's my family. The situation is really hard. It's really tough. I always want to use my voice to let the people not from Venezuela know what they're doing, what are they living. And this situation has been for a long time. Now we have the el apoyo, I was going to say that.
The support.
The support of so many countries, but they realize now that we've been living in a mess since the last 20 years. And it's really sad that I don't think that it's going to be a really good exit for Venezuela. And I just, try to help the way I could do as a journalist, as a sports journalist, because I'm not a hard news journalist, because I didn't, do that in my career. And I love sports and I want to stay here. But as a spokesperson, as a Venezuelan who's living outside, that I could have the opportunity to go to see my family, because since my mom came here to live with me, it's been 6 years since the last time I went, and I really feel really afraid to go. So I do whatever I can do from here to help my family, to help a lot of people, because that's all the people need there, help. People that understand that where they're living is miserable, and people, they don't have even food, just the normal things to have a life. They can have that. Now there's a power problem, there's a water problem, so everything, it's gets really difficult, and I just try to be a voice and to help from here, whatever I can do to help them.
Yeah,
to make their life a little bit happier.
Yeah,
and
obviously what's happening in Venezuela is more important, a lot more important than sports. But I guess I think also of the Venezuela national soccer team, and they've yet to make a World Cup. If they were to make the World Cup in 2022, it would be certainly a moment of national pride. Where does sports and the national team, where does that fit in with all the horrible things that are happening in Venezuela? Is it an opportunity for people? I don't know. I guess what I'm asking here is where does sports fit?
Well, the La Vinotinto, which is the nickname of our national team, it's always bring joy to the people in Venezuela. It's the only thing that we have in common right now. people in Venezuela, it's been a long time that they are, you know, we are separated because of political ideas. Mm-hmm. So La Vino Tinto, it's that thing that makes us feel Venezuelans. That's the thing that come us brings us together. And of course, since we have never been able to qualify to a World Cup, so the World Cup would be like the most important moment in sports in Venezuela, and it would be the happiest moment since the last 20 years in our country. And sometimes, yeah, you're right, like you said, sports is not as important as the life of people that it's suffering in Venezuela, but always sports and football, we have to see this sport as a social thing too. Sports like football, like baseball, always bring people together. And unfortunately, our situation is really, really complicated, not just political, socially, in all manners. Mm-hmm. But even La Vino Tinto is doing good besides that. Like the federation it's been having a lot of trouble. La Liga in Venezuela, it's been really tough too, because all the situation in this country affect that too.
Yeah.
But La Vino Tinto lately, it's been at least giving happiness to people. Mm-hmm. Of course, you're not going to close your eyes and, okay, nothing is going on in Venezuela because La Vino Tinto is having a good time. Of course not. But this is something that you give to the people and people enjoying it.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, Venezuela.
They need to be happy sometimes, and that's a really important manner in back in Venezuela, mm-hmm. because La Vino Tinto it's been criticized really, really tough lately, but well, if they're still going on, we cannot stop that because of the situation.
Yeah. Well, Venezuela actually playing the United States men's team ahead of the Gold Cup. Lots of talent on that Venezuelan team. This has been a really good conversation, Adriana. I just want to thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, thank you, Grant. Thank you. I really enjoyed it too. And don't be a stranger. I really enjoy, you know, I know I'm living in Miami now, but I can use, you know, some practice to my English with you.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Planet Football Podcast. I'd like to thank Adriana Monsalve, as well as producer Brandon Nix, and everyone at Sports Illustrated who supports this podcast. Just a quick reminder, it's a huge help if you subscribe to, rate, and review the podcast. It helps people find us. See you next time.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only. Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.